The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve?
Uh-huh.
Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Friday. 14th day of September. 2012. We got an echo.
Yes, we do.
Okay.
I got to mute one of you.
Muted.
Try it now.
Unmuted.
You know what?
There it is. We're good.
We have audio perfection, which is so rare. Welcome back. Today's Friday, 14th day of September, 2012. The Dow's up 41 points. S&P is up 6. Comp is up 30. Crude is up 85, if I can read my own handwriting, I think. I'll have a chart scroll by here in a minute. And gold's up around $4. Okay, this is all on the back of the Fed. And Europe's... We talked yesterday at the end of the broadcast, and we talked also last night in the partners' workshop about we had seen Wall Street's reaction, but we had not had an opportunity yet to see the rest of the world's reaction, that being the Asian markets and European markets. And quite frankly, there wasn't much of any reaction. It would appear they got out of bed and did their trading on the Fed announcement. Because overnight, we are now reflecting the December contract. Our final tweet that went out on the September contract, which was to be long about 1438, it took a couple days. I wrote about it on the blog. It took a couple days for that trade to come together, but when it finally took off on the back of the Fed yesterday, we ended up with about a 26-point rally. We are now in the December contract, and the prices, all prices reflected going forward will be for December, and all tweets going forward. So anything that gets tweeted, perhaps on the Globex Open Sunday night, just be aware and make sure that not only your chart, but your DOM is set up for the December contract, 1460.50. Current price. That's what you should be showing on your chart. If not, you need to roll your chart forward. Volume on the December contract has exceeded the September contract, and that's what we use as our own signal to roll over. In news today, superhero entrepreneur Elon Musk says he has a plan to transport people from San Francisco to Los Angeles in just 30 minutes. Musk is cooking up plans for something he calls the Hyperloop. He won't share specifics, but says it's some sort of tube capable of taking someone from downtown San Francisco to Los Angeles in 30 minutes. He calls it a fifth mode of transportation, the previous four being trains, planes, and automobiles and boats. What you want is something that never crashes, that's at least as twice as fast as an airplane, that's solar powered, and that leaves right when you arrive, so there's no waiting for a specific departure time. His friends claim he's had a Hyperloop technological breakthrough over the summer. Musk says, I want to talk to the governor and the president about it because the $60 billion bullet train they're proposing in California would be the slowest bullet train in the world at the highest cost per mile. They're going for records in all the wrong ways. The cost of the San Francisco to Los Angeles Hyperloop would be in the $6 billion range, according to Musk. That would be quite a trick to get from L.A. to Frisco in 30 minutes. Analysts are downgrading AT&T and Verizon both because of the success of the iPhone. U.S. carriers have a love-hate relationship with the iPhone, and analysts downgraded both AT&T and Verizon after the iPhone went on sale. Carriers may get customers, but they have to shell out hundreds on a subsidy that cuts into their margins. Most of you who have an iPhone or an iDevice know that when you go in to buy it, if you get the data plan, you get the phone at a greatly reduced price. Well, Apple's not the one doing that. AT&T, Verizon, whoever your data carrier is, they're footing the bill. One of the companies that downgraded AT&T and Verizon today said the companies were overvalued and would see lowered margins because of the success of the iPhone 5. Analyst Christopher King wrote in his downgrade notices that because the iPhone 5 would go on sale during the third quarter, which was earlier than he expected, the sales would likely affect margins for both companies during the entire second half of the year. AT&T and Verizon fought to get the iPhone. Sprint did not get mentioned in this article, so I'm not sure why, because they pay a subsidy as well. I mean, we're talking about, well, the old iPhone, the iPhone 4S, that was like a $600 bill if you just bought the phone straight out. And if you went into an AT&T store and took a two-year contract, you got the phone for $199. So the other $400, that was getting paid for by AT&T because they knew that over the life of your two-year contract that they would, in fact, make their money back. The success of the iPhone 5, the bright side of it is that the carriers will get new contract customers in a saturated mobile market that will use a lot of data. And the carriers are doing everything they can to move customers to the newer and more profitable shared data plans. So the upfront margin loss should work itself out over the life of those contracts. The average data plan with AT&T is around $100 a month. So that's $1,200 a year. A two-year contract is worth $2,400 to them. So they paid $400, for instance, for my phone to get me into that contract. So they still make $2,000 over 2 years. So we won't weep for them too much. Now, who we might weep for is Hewlett-Packard. Some of you remember Hewlett-Packard, the company that purchased Palm. Does anybody remember Palm? I mean, that was like... Actually, that was the beginning, if I'm not mistaken, of the tech IPO wipeouts. Up until Palm... When they IPO'd that thing, anything that had net or com or tech in the name, all it had to do was just go public and people threw money at it. And it seems as though I remember, this was in probably 1999, 2000, that the whole thing ground to a halt. And it seems like Palm, it was right when they had the WebOS, the whole thing just, you know, never took off. The reasons for the failure are numerous, but the new CEO, Meg Whitman, is saying that they can't abandon the market entirely. In an interview with Fox Business, she said that Hewlett-Packard ultimately has to offer a smartphone. I don't know why. I mean, there's enough smartphones out there that do everything imaginable to try to compete in that market. It makes no sense to me, but Hewlett-Packard, she's the CEO, and she says they're going to move ahead. Though she was willing to acknowledge that the company is working on it, she would not divulge too many details about its mobile plans. Whether or not WebOS may rise from the ashes as a largely community-powered platform remains to be seen. But we wouldn't be shocked to see HP pivot towards its longtime partner Microsoft and release a Windows Phone 8 device. Perhaps the best glimmer of hope for the former Palm system was Meg's focus on developing markets. She rightly points out that in some parts of the world, the first and only computer that a person may ever own is a smartphone, and reaching that audience is essential to Hewlett-Packard's success. Going back to the WebOS with its open source support would allow the company to save a few dollars on the cost of a new handset. For those that may not be familiar with it, WebOS was the operating system for Palm. iOS is the operating system for all Apple products. And Android, of course, operates the Google phones. So, and WebOS was a open source program, which means developers from all over were able to work and collaborate on that. So it'll be interesting to see if they head in
Microsoft
that direction.
Microsoft is already backing Nokia.
I'm sorry?
The Windows. Microsoft is already backing Nokia. They have Windows on there, Lumina.
But this Windows 8, I heard a lot of strange things about people's reactions to it. But for those who get freaked out by it, when you fire up your device, there's a setting in the control panel, like in something like control panel, that can make your computer look normal. They're just not confident that people are going to readily adapt to the Windows 8 interface. So you can go into Control Panel or somewhere, flip a switch and say, show me the old Windows look, and then you'll get something that's much more familiar, something that looks like Windows XP, or at least Windows 7. So you'll be working in a familiar environment. Other than that, guys, the news is there's no real news. Well, there's some geopolitical news and some tension and some issues. And there's a lot of talk about what happened at the embassy, what happened to Christopher Stevens. I really don't want to talk about it on the show today. It's yet to be substantiated how much truth there is to it. We won't be able to rely on our own media here in the U.S., I don't believe, to give us the truth. We'll have to turn, as we often do, to media from other countries. Perhaps The Guardian will break this story and give us the full details of what really went on at that embassy, not only during the hours of the attack and after, but in the days leading up to the attack. Word is, this came as no surprise. And the horrific things that are said to have taken place during the attack, if in fact our government was aware, then it's a dark day for America. So, with that said, you can see here our support down at 2728, which held for a couple, day and a half, on the S&P 500. With the Fed announcement, we blew out the top of 5152. We have another level that I don't think we're going to see this week up above us at, I do believe it's 8182. Is that correct, Michael? Yeah, 8081. Yeah, I don't see us getting that far up today. I don't know that anything's going to come into the market and push us up to 8081. So we'll definitely close inside of the zones for the week. In fact, there's a real good possibility that before, I know this looks pretty bullish right here on the hourly chart. Could we get back below 53 for the day? That's a good question. This area right in here. You know, it looks pretty bullish, and I don't see any reason for the market to sell off. Everybody's still riding that high of the Fed unleashing all that money. You know, another thing the Fed could have done, and this is something to think about, we talked about how the Fed is reluctant, or not the Fed, but how the banks are reluctant to loan they already have excess cash. They're afraid to loan it. It's safer to just deposit it overnight and earn a little bit of interest on it. The Fed could have gone a different direction. They could have told the banks, instead of saying we're going to print more cash that you won't loan, we're no longer going to pay you interest on those overnight deposits. In fact, we're going to charge you a penalty on your excess cash. Bankers would be chasing you down in the street saying, hey, do you have a pulse? Okay. Do you have a dream? Do you have a hope? Do you have a plan? Does it make sense? Can it work? Let's put our heads together. Because if I don't make some good solid loans, I'm going to lose my job. Now, there's a job creation program. Rather than putting money into the pockets of those who are already wealthy so that they can buy up the cheap real estate in the troubled areas of this country so that they can in turn rent those houses out to the people who just got kicked out of them, because those people can't qualify for the loan because they don't have enough money on deposit. It's a horrible cycle that we're setting in motion here, and it's a horrible example we're setting for the world. We could have done this thing a whole lot different. could have told the banks, look, you got money, you will loan it, or we'll charge you a penalty. Instead of paying you interest every night on the money you don't loan, we're going to charge you a penalty on the money you don't loan. That would have changed things quick. You'd have seen job creation like you can't imagine. But they chose to go a different direction. Now, our generation and generations to come will have to deal with that. And there's some who say it was the best thing that could have ever happened. Time will tell. Michael, it's all yours. Let's do the recap.
Now, hopefully this recap is going to work out properly. Speaking through one and recording through another.
And for anyone who's maybe new to the show, maybe you're not fully familiar with what quantitative easing really is. 2 years ago, we showed a cartoon on the show. It was really so well done about the Fed and the Ben Bernanke and the printing of the money and the Goldman Sachs. I'll dig that link up and I'll put it in the blog post tonight for those of you who've never seen it. It is incredibly informative. I came away from that cartoon. It runs about 20 minutes, 25 minutes. It was entertaining, but more than anything else, it was extremely educational. And 2 years later, I highly recommend it. And so I'll put that. I might even put the link in the chat room today if I can dig up the link during the show. Otherwise, I'll put it in the blog tonight. All right, Michael, we got your chart. Right. Go ahead.
That link is in the blog somewhere if you look in the history of the blog. You had posted that in the blog
yeah.
a while back. That may be an easier way to find it. All right. Let me get the recording going here. All right, good afternoon, everyone. Today is Friday, September 14th, 2012. You can see the results right here. This is gold, plus 28 ticks. This is crude oil, plus 3 ticks. This is the YM, minus 8 ticks. And this is the ES, minus 6 ticks. Dwayne had his Dom up there earlier with his ES results. He was actually plus...
4 points.
4 points. So he was plus 16 ticks. Right. That said, if you have not taken a trial with us, go to www.cfrn.net/apply. In the free trial, you get 5 days in our live trading room, 2 hours per day. You get access to all of the indicators that you see here. And all the data feeds and the charting platform. Okay, all that for just supplying your name and email address. That's all we ask for. All right, moving on to the actual trades that we took today. All right, I took on the ES. Let's start with this. All right, we opened up over here, right in here, and it just kept going up and up and up and up. The first pullback down to the BBC right here, we took a long trade on that. It eventually stopped us out at minus 2 points. After we got a bearish cross, pull back up to the BBC again. There was an opportunity to short right in here. All right. Now, before I say... Well, okay, let me just finish. We pulled back here. We shorted right here. Once we had closed down below the M81, we moved our stop to plus a couple of ticks. It came back up and stopped us out at plus a couple of ticks, and then it went down to our profit target. Now, in this trade over here that we took, this long trade that we took, the cycle was headed down quite a bit, but I wasn't looking at the slingshot at the time. I just got in on the first pullback to the BBC here. There was actually a short trade that developed while we were in that long trade. If you didn't take the long trade, then you had an opportunity right here. We had a bearish cross, a pullback up, and tested the BBC. We even had bearish divergence, and that also went for 2 points. After we put in a lower swing right here, there was another opportunity. Right here, it was at the end of the morning session. I had said I wasn't going to take it because it was the end of the morning session. But it tested the BBC again for another 2-point gain. Right, another possible 2-point gain. And that was the ES this morning. I didn't take any trades on the NQ. At least I don't remember taking any trades on the NQ. I know we identified some. And we had identified some momentum trades. For those of you guys who were in the partners meeting last night, here was a momentum trade right here. Here was another one right here. And the rest of them were just normal trades. Now, the normal trade setup, I should point out, is you get a bullish cross, a pullback test to the BBC with an up close, and then you go long. Now, you want to make sure you have some divergence to support the trade down here. Bullish divergence. Divergence is when this green line on the slingshot is going in the opposite direction of the cycle on the slingshot. You can see all these ellipses are places where that happened. This one right here may have been a losing trade depending on what your stop was and what your entry was, but all the other ones were winning opportunities. Okay? That is the NQ. Now, the same exact setup over here on gold is what got us the 28 ticks this morning. All right, I only took one trade on gold to get those 28 ticks. It was right here. But before that happened, there was this opportunity right here, a bullish cross, pullback, test to the BBC with an up close. And down here on the slingshot, of course, we had bullish divergence. All right, the next opportunity was on the short side. We had a bearish cross, pullback up, and test to the BBC. I shorted right in here, and you can see we had the bearish divergence. And I took 28 ticks from that. I didn't short this one because the cycle was moving up too much, but that gave another 30 ticks, I think. The next one right here, again, the cycle was going up too much, but it tested the BBC, gave a down close, and moved down some more. Over here, there was another one, bullish cross, tested the BBC with an up close. I missed that and this. But there was plenty of opportunity there in gold this morning. Okay, you can see it happening again and again and again and again. And that was gold. All right, let me show you the crude oil. I only took one trade on crude this morning as well. It was right in there, I think. Yeah, it was right in here. After this bearish cross, price came back, tested the BBC, and gave a down close. And, of course, down here on the bottom, we had bearish divergence. All right. It's the same setup on all the four tick range charts. We're doing the same exact thing. Same set of indicators, same set of rules, following the same pattern over and over and over again. You can see right here, we had an opportunity on the long side, there, and there. And there were also some momentum opportunities in here. Those of you that were in the partners meeting last night, you can go through it yourselves and take a look and find those opportunities. Right now, it's got bullish divergence, a bullish cross, tested the BBC with an up close right in here. So it's looking like it wants to move up. One thing worth noting is that crude is almost at $100 a barrel right now. Okay. Let's see, what else do we have? The YM. On the YM, I took one trade. Right here. It was the same pullback that the ES failed on. Alright, yeah, pullback right here stopped me out at minus 8 ticks. Now, I had drawn in a trend line here in the live trading room. I'll draw it for you. This right there was the trend line. I was looking for price to get on the other side of that trend line. And it didn't do it until way down here. Okay? I didn't take this short trade right here. I don't remember exactly why, but I didn't take this short trade right here. We were short on the ES at the time, I believe. This was it right here. I lost 8 ticks on this. You know, price moved up, tested the BBC. It didn't move up after the test. This one right here happened in the live trading room this morning, but it was right on top of a news event, so we didn't take that. Okay. That was it for the YM. So I did the YM, the crude, the gold, the ES, the NQ. Oh, the Russell. I didn't show you the Russell. Again, I didn't trade any on the Russell, but there was one good opportunity this morning, right here. Bullish divergence, bullish cross, bullish divergence, tested the BBC with an up close. Okay, the same thing over and over and over again. These little rectangles that you see in here were momentum trades that we went over in the partners meeting last night. There were actually a couple more of them that I could put in here. Actually, just right over here as well. All right. for all the partners that were in the partners meeting last night, you'll recognize those. And they were, you know, those type of trades, you're not risking a bunch because you're expecting it to just take off as soon as you enter. Okay. If it starts to consolidate or anything like that, then there's no momentum in the momentum trade and you want to just get out. All right. That is where I'm going to stop the recording. All right, I've stopped the recording now. If anybody has any questions, I mean, you could have typed them in before, but if anybody has any questions, just type them in. If, again, if you're on the free trial and your free trial is about to expire, you should have something in your inbox, or you know, probably from a few days ago, have something in your inbox telling you how to become a partner, okay? It's got all the information you need, and if you don't have that information and you want that information, just send us an email at support@cfrn.net with partner info in the subject. Okay? That's it.
And Roy, if you're tuned in, I just sent you an updated email with the correct link for next week. So you got two emails. Ignore the first one. The second one's got your link for next week. But for everyone who's taking the free trial today, you might want to follow in the email that you get, not the first one where you click the confirmation link, but the second one that you get after you've confirmed. There's a link. The top link is to get into the live trading room next week. It's got the link and the password. But below that, it says download the demo platform. I encourage you to do that today. Click the link, get the demo platform downloaded today. This way, if you have any issues, any problems, it's a pretty seamless process, but if you have an issue, you can call Bert while he's in the office today, 866-928-3310. That's toll free. He'll be happy to walk you through the process. Not only will he help you get your charts up and running, your data flowing, but he'll also help you get your indicators indicating. That will give you 2 days, three, today, Saturday, Sunday, three days to get familiar with the platform, the charts, the indicators, all of that stuff. It comes with an owner's manual, instruction manual. It's digital. Just click help and you go to the manual and boom. Any question you have is there. You can reach Michael and I over the weekend, support@cfrn.net. We check in periodically. You can call us anytime after dark, 415-857-5654. All those numbers are in the email that you're going to receive once you sign up for the free trial. So my point is this. You have 3 days to get familiar with the platform, to get familiar with the indicators, and then your actual free trial, it doesn't even start until Monday morning. You then get 5 full days in the live trading room. Kick the tires, turn over the stones, find out if what we do is right for you. Okay? So with that, Michael, anything else you want to add before we go to Vegas?
I just wanted to say in that email there's also a bunch of videos about the actual indicators themselves, little video overviews. So you should take a look at the email. There's a lot of information in there. You know, that will save you some questions later on.
Well said. I've had a number of people that I've had conversations with say, oh, I never got that. You got it. No. All I got was an email that gave me the link and the password to get into the live trading room. Okay. Do you still have that email? Yeah, I got it right here. Okay, could you open it? Sure. They're right there. Link, password. Yeah. Scroll down a little bit. Oh, I never saw all that. Ton of information. Okay. And then once you click the link further down, that's going to take you to some pages on our website that aren't readily available to the public where you'll get even more information. Okay, so I'm the worst in the world for getting an email, skimming it, you know, glancing at it, making it appear that I actually read it, and then moving on. So if you're going to take the free trial, you need to read the entire email. Okay? There's a lot of good information in there. And then click the link so that you can go through the process of downloading the platform, getting the indicators in. And if you're going to do it today, then now's a good time because you'll be able to call Bert toll-free, and he'll walk you through any issues that you have getting it up and running. Okay? All right. With that said, we're going to go to Las Vegas and talk to Mr. David Williams from PageTrader.com. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310 and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Good morning, Dwayne.
Good morning, David. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, and good morning, Michael.
Good morning, David.
Well, here we are, Friday. We're heading into mid-September. Temperatures are starting to come down. Volatility, isn't it interesting? Look how volatility picked up in the markets as soon as the summer ended. The summer is a great time to take vacations. Now, that may not be a breakthrough insight, but when it comes to trading in the markets, it often is a great time to take a vacation because the market really does slow down. The last 7 years that we've been on this program and many years before that, it's been very obvious that summertime is a slower period. The volatility drops away. And we had talked about the idea that the volatility would likely return once summer had ended. It certainly has, and this means, at least from our perspective, and I'm sure from everyone else's, that with this new volatility, we'll probably begin seeing much better intraday swing trading opportunities rather than seeing these big moves that look like they happened really fast, but when you go inside the time frames and look at what really happened, it was a very slow grinding move in a particular direction. So I'm hoping to see that happen. I'm hoping to see the volatility stay high. But there are some people who would argue that we're not really quite there yet with volatility, that it has certainly picked up, but the volatility that they're looking for is in both directions, both up and down. Right now, it's kind of a one-way street. So there you are. It's a beautiful day here in Las Vegas, Dwayne. I'm sure you guys have some very nice weather in Arizona as well. Or should I say Ecuador?
Yes, you should say Ecuador.
Is that Peru? My geography is terrible. No.
No, it's two separate. Two separate
okay.
Countries.
So Ecuador is not near where you have your the work that you're doing in. That is Peru.
No, that's Africa.
Africa.
That's a different.
Still a wrong country.
That's a continent.
Wrong continent.
Yep. Can I get it any more wrong than this? Does it think it's possible, or could I?
I don't think so, no.
I thought for a moment maybe you were moving for some reason to the, or if, I don't know when you're moving, but if you are, you know, if and when it happens, that you would be moving maybe closer to that, the orphanage and all that.
No, it's still, you know, it's not anything imminent. That's just future plans.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I've lived all over the world. I've lived in Japan. I've lived in the Philippines. I've visited. There's not a lot of places I haven't been. I've been all through Europe, into Africa. But There's something about Ecuador that my wife and I really liked when we visited there, and mm-hmm. we think that we are potentially, you know, going to move there.
At some point, right. Yeah,
yeah, and it will be called, and it will be on the ocean, and it will be called Trader's Paradise, and it will have a beautiful tower that overlooks the ocean, and there will be a bunch of guys sitting around at their computers looking out at the ocean and trading E-mini futures, and it'll be called, did I mention, Trader's Paradise.
Well, there you are.
And we're going to do like a whole pirate, you know, pirate-themed kind of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be trading
have, like,
very
pirate
short,
ship.
We'll be trading short-term. It'll be like smash and grab as opposed to, yeah, no, I'm sorry. Will I wear pirate garb, are you asking?
Well, I'm assuming.
Oh,
I would
okay.
right out of the box
oh,
assume
yeah.
that you would.
I already got my eye patch.
Okay.
Got it on
well,
eBay.
Gonna be hard to
actually, I got it on Amazon. I had to order it early because I didn't want to have to pay shipping.
Oh, there you are. Well, so how is your weather in Arizona since you're still there?
You know, it's cooled down significantly.
Good.
It got down the other day when we had a little rain. It got down in the 80s. Now it's backed up to, I think yesterday when I was driving around in the afternoon, it was like 99, but, you know, I know this sounds weird to most people, but any time that it gets below 100 degrees in Phoenix, it's fairly pleasant, you know?
Yeah.
It's doable.
I received a call yesterday from Robin Dane, the Traders coach. And she was driving. Where is she now? She's somewhere in on the East Coast.
She's in New Hampshire or Connecticut.
New Hampshire, yeah, something like that. And she is taking care of some business out there. And she mentioned to me that she had been to something here in Las Vegas where there was a car show of some kind where they had Chevrolets there, and they had the Chevy Volt people there. And so she asked them about the 199 Volt lease deal that we had been talking about a few days ago, right here on the radio program. And one of the guys from, because each dealership can do what they want. I mean, that's, you know, Chevy offers it, and then the dealer decides whether they're going to offer it or not. But one of the guys that owned an Atlanta dealership said, yeah, I'll do that deal with you. And he said, I'll ship you the car. So, you know, just letting you guys know that if you check, I don't know which dealer in Atlanta, you know, Atlanta, Georgia. I know that much geography. You want to call them up. You might want to check that out.
At least you got the right continent. That's pretty good.
I did. I got both right. The only reason I did, by the way, because geography has been tough for me, is because many, many, many years ago, I bought a car from a place called Tucker Motor Cars in, FAF Motor Cars.
In Tucker, Georgia?
Like FAF Motor Cars in Tucker, Georgia.
Okay.
That's what it was. And so I remember we had to fly into Atlanta, Georgia, and then drive to Tucker, Georgia. One interesting thing about Georgia that I, you know, only having never been there before and having driven there, is that a lot of the businesses, the backsides of businesses, walk right into a forest. There's nothing behind these businesses except a forest. And so the same thing was true with this car dealership. So beautiful place. You know, I know that, you know, maybe the demographics and the crime and the this and the that, and there's various things, but it's a beautiful area, four-season area. Anyway, so if you do have an interest, if anybody has an interest in the 199 lease deal, I mean, that's a steal. I'm telling you. If you can pay 199 to get yourself a Chevy Volt, save yourself pretty much all the gasoline that you're spending now. You know, gasoline is a car payment unto itself.
Yeah, I mean, at 199, I know that we spend more than $200 a month on gas, and so...
Oh, yeah. Oh, between the two of you?
I went online the other day during the show, and I clicked on one of the local dealers, and it said
they're not going to be offering that in Arizona. I don't think.
Why not?
Primarily because I think that most dealerships, I mean, you tell me, but most dealerships in metropolitan areas are, Arizona is a good area. That's a nice area. There's people that have money there. They don't have any really a big incentive to offer, though.
Are you saying Atlanta's the ghetto, or?
To some extent, there's nice. No question. There's nice. Some worse areas in Atlanta, but it's not. I put it this way: Atlanta, many areas of Atlanta are certainly not downtown Phoenix, Arizona. You know, or some of the nicer parts of what's the other part of Phoenix there that forgot the name of your little cities and or little areas. But you have it's kind of high-end stuff down there.
You've been here lately?
I've been there for years.
We're kind of entering a little bit of a recession.
Well, yeah, that doesn't change the physical structure of the place, though. Arizona is very pretty.
It's the desert.
I'm sorry?
It's a desert, I mean.
Well, come out to Las Vegas, and you take a look at Las Vegas, and then take a look Arizona, and tell me which desert is prettier to you.
Yeah, well, it's like the moon in Vegas. Yeah, so anyway, point being, Chevy Volt dealers are Chevy Volt dealers. So the one that I clicked on the internet and filled out the little thing that said I'd like to get more information about the lease on the 199 thing, the guy's called me like 10 times and left a bunch of messages that says, I want to do this deal, and I just haven't called him back. So
okay.
I'll call him back just, in fact.
just to see.
Yeah, I'll call him back just to see. Maybe I'll invite him to come on the show Monday and talk about the deal and why some dealers would do it and some won't, and if his dealership's willing to do it. And
yeah.
Because I would find it very interesting that a guy, because if I say, well, there's a guy in Atlanta that will ship me one for that price, why in the world wouldn't this guy right here in town? I mean, if the guy in Atlanta can afford to do it, because the guy in Atlanta, he had to pay the same amount for the car that the guy in Phoenix had to pay for, correct?
I believe so.
I don't know
the car business well enough to know exactly.
Yeah. So it just seems crazy to me that...
He may have to pay the same, but he may not be willing to make the thinner margin. That's the difference. Hmm. I honestly don't know how they do it at $199 at all. Margin or not, I mean they're moving something and not making any money on it just to move a car.
Well, it costs them $80,000 to build the car, and I mean they'll sell it to you for $40,000. So how do they do that?
Well, to be honest with you, that calculation is a little bit unfair, because what they're doing to get that calculation, the one where they say it actually cost them $49,000, it's like having a building that you just paid $10 million for, and you're leasing it out, and you now have $1 million worth of income, but you haven't leased the whole building out. And you could say, well, with the current $1 million worth of income, it's costing us this much per space, but you haven't yet leased out the rest of the building. So that's what they're doing with the cars, is they're saying, well, given the number of cars they've sold, it's costing them $90,000 per car. But that figure actually isn't what it's costing them per car. It's what the numbers are right now, but they're continually selling cars. And you could make that argument about any car. You could say, here comes the new, name your car Model X, and it comes out. And when the first one sells, you can take the full development cost of it and say, well, it costs them the full development cost, cost them $1 billion minus $49,000. So that car... They cost them, $999,479,000. And every time it sells a car, that number goes down a little. That's how they came up with that figure. That's what they're doing. The true figure, the true development cost of the car was about $500 million. So they're taking that amount and they're saying, here's how many cars they've sold. And they're simply taking the total development cost by the number of cars they've sold, and they say, well, it's costing them $49,000 per car or more. But you could make that same argument about any car, because every car has development costs. You follow?
Oh, yeah. I follow you.
Yeah, so that's a little unfair. That car, let me tell you something. The Chevy Volt has been the most maligned new car in probably the last 30 or 40 years that has come out. And yet, it has the highest customer satisfaction of any car ever. Ever. It went, since they've been recording J.D. Powers Associates or all the other stuff. Highest customer satisfaction of any car. But it's the most politically maligned because of President Obama's investment with taxpayer funds into GM. And the Chevy Bolt was actually started in development prior to him coming into office. But the fact is it became a very, it was a hot potato political thing. And, you know, we saw even Fox News, you know, they did a lot of beating up that car. But now people are starting to understand what it is and how it works and what it can do for them. You know, how wonderful it is to not have to go to a gas station. I've got 10,500 miles on my car, and I've got 10 gallons of gas I've used. So I could say it's not really true, but it is true. I'm getting about 1,000 miles per gallon. Now, and that's because I'm driving locally here in my city. If you were a person that was driving more than 50 miles a day, that would be a different case. But one of the things you have as an advantage in the Volt, which is starting to be seen as much more brilliant than it was when it first came out, is the fact that you do have a pretty good long, most of your driving is going to be anywhere from, you know, the average person drives about 28 miles per day. That's average across a wide range of people. This car will cover all that, and you never have to use gasoline at all. You can almost double that and still not use any gasoline. If you do need to use gasoline and you have to drive further, you don't have to run out of electricity and go plug it in. The gas generator comes on, and then you spend the rest of the time getting about 35 to 37 miles per gallon. So that has happened to me enough times where I've used 10 gallons so far in owning it. I've owned it for about nearly 10 months now. So it's fabulous. And I've told, you know, I've mentioned it so many times on the program, it's silly, but it's just been a wonderful car, and it's been wonderful to not go to gas stations. Gas stations themselves are a car payment. That's how much they add up to. So for me, it made a huge difference because I came down from a very expensive gasoline-using car, you know, meaning it uses a lot of gasoline, like $450 worth a month.
Here's a guy in Culver City that will lease you a 2013 Volt for $199 a month for 36 months.
That's a killer deal.
In Culver
City.
That
is a killer deal.
Yeah.
So you'd spend about $7,500 in 3 years on that car.
Okay, now the drive off on this is the other ad that we saw had like a $2,500 drive off fee, but this one has a $4,000 drive off.
So they're hitting you a little harder up
first
front.
And
that's what I'm
taxes,
that's what I think is happening.
DMV, ACQ fees, zero security deposit. You're allowed 10,000 miles per year. I think that's
pretty
standard.
Lowered it. No, they lowered it. So that's one of the ways they're doing it. They're lowering your mileage because the normal lease, as everybody knows, is 12,000 to 15. So you pick between 12 and 15. 10,000 is a little lower than most people drive.
Well, they're
doing
on a car like, for instance, you drive your car. I mean, this car is basically a commuter car.
It's a city car.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, I mean, you can drive it across country, but for
yes.
the most part, it, as a commuter car. What do you average about 40 miles a day?
I think I'm doing 40 or less, sometimes a little bit more, but 40 or less per day.
So if you did 40 miles a day every day for a year, that would be 14,600 miles.
Yeah. And then what you have to do is you have to pay.
Yeah, 25 cents per excess mile.
So what they've done on that deal is they've bumped up. Normally it's 20 cents a mile. They bumped that up by a nickel. They've lowered your normal amount from 12,000 miles down to 10,000. So they're getting it back in some way, shape, or form. Also, a 199 Volt is not going to have every feature. It's not going to have the backup camera. And some of those things don't, you know, may not mean anything to you, but they're very convenient to have. So you have to consider all that. But it worked out because it saved me, you know, I'm not spending $450 a month in gasoline. That payment went away. So a new payment came in, but it's almost equivalent to the amount that I'm saving. So I couldn't say no to that. So there you are. I just think before you get out of here and get to Ecuador, I think you ought to be in a Chevy Volt, Dwayne.
They don't have electricity in that part of the world, David.
Oh, okay. That's right. Yeah.
See, the guys who are going to be at their trading stations up in the tower overlooking the ocean, they're going to have these little pedals. They're going to have to, like, pedal.
That's good. They'll be pedaling their own internet connectivity and electricity for their computer.
That's right.
All right. Well, anyway, that's very good. I haven't checked around yet either. I'm glad you did. That's good. Some good homework you did to see where they are and what they're doing. But, you know, you have to read the fine print on all these deals, as you know. So if you're driving a very fuel efficient car now, it doesn't make as much sense to switch over from driving a Prius, as an example, over to a Chevy Volt. But you will, if you're driving 50 miles or less a day, you'll completely beat out the Prius for gas mileage. Because, you know, you'll practically never use it. So, in fact, the other day I was in a gas station. Somebody had to teach me again how to utilize, you know, where do you put the handle? Mm-hmm. I wasn't quite sure. So I needed
Layla some help. Says it costs over $800 a month to lease one in the UK.
Yeah, it's called the Ampera in the UK. And it's a wildly popular car out there. It really flew out there. So they're doing real well. They're selling a lot for a car that has been this maligned and this beaten up and, you know, all that stuff. They've really come back around. And then we get to the markets here. I just want to mention that the Nissan Leaf, which is a pure electric, which has about somewhere between the 70 and 90 mile range, depending on how you drive, it's had some problems in the heat, specifically in Arizona. There's been a number of owners, there's a whole site about it, that have complained about their battery having degraded because of the heat. And therefore, they can't charge it fully, it's losing charge, et cetera. And so all these different things that have happened since the Volt has come out has shown the brilliance of the design that they had. The Volt has very sophisticated heating and cooling for the battery so that it always is in a very nice temperature. Guess what doesn't have that? The Nissan Leaf. They're having problems with that. So they're going to have to address those problems. And the Volt, you know, doesn't. You can park the Volt in blazing hot sun and it doesn't hurt it at all. And, you know, it still charges up fully, et cetera. I haven't had any degradation. I've driven it for 10,000 miles and it charges up fully and continues. So they've put a lot of safeguards into the car. And I think in the end, it's going to end up being a fabulous purchase or lease for anybody who is interested in saving significant gas. It really works well if you're driving the normal amount per day, somewhere between 50 and less miles per day. If you drive more than that, you'll still rarely fill it up. But they have a clever thing on their site, on Chevy's site, under the Volt, that shows how many EV miles have been driven since they, you know, everybody's all accumulated it together, and it shows a counter, kind of like the debt clock, you know, for the government.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows you how many total miles have been driven in Volt and how many EV miles have been driven and how much savings. And the savings, of course, is in the millions and millions of dollars that we've not paid out in gasoline. So that alone is going to affect the bottom line at some point here for people. And I know that the big argument, well, you know, you're just plugging it in over here and you're just moving the coal is polluting over here. But I got news for you. Coal is not polluting as much as gasoline does. And then, by the way, it takes a whole lot of electricity to refine gasoline. So that electricity used to refine gasoline is also polluting because it's being produced in many cases by coal. Out here in Las Vegas, of course, we have Hoover Dam and our electricity is not being generated by coal. So it really is a very, very clean form of energy out here. Either way, it's still cleaner than driving a gasoline car. I do want to mention, I don't say this a lot on the radio, but because these cars have immediate torque, that the full 270 foot-pounds is produced at 1 RPM. So as soon as you put your foot into it, the car has 270 foot-pounds, and it scoots off the line very, very promptly. And occasionally at a stoplight, somebody will be sitting there, and you can tell he wants to test you and whatever. And so you kind of run him. And so this morning, the guy in a big Cadillac, an older Cadillac, as I was driving to work, it was 4:45 in the morning here, very early. And right at the light next to me is a guy that's driving a big old, you know, one of those really, really big, long, old Cadillacs. And, you know, he kind of revved his engine. I looked over at him, and he kind of smiled. And so I knew, you know, we were going to run him. He wanted to go. And anyway, the light changed. And I just want to report on the radio here that the Chevy Volt beat him handily up to about 55 miles an hour, at which point he was gaining on me, and I did want to slow down because we were on a street where I know there's a decent number of motorcycle policemen, but I think I made my point with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting off the line, getting across the intersection, that's what it's all about. We know that. Later, if the guy catches up and beats you, you know, whatever. But I have to hand it to him. His car did get up and scoot a little bit later. You know, later when we were up at 55, he was still running strong, and so he probably had a little something done to that. I don't encourage people to go racing around on the highways, but it's like bet you can't eat just one. Once you drive an electric car with the full torque right there, you'll see. You'll be scooting. You'll be showing off to all kinds of people with your new little scooter. How quiet, and it's totally quiet. There's nothing. It feels like somebody's just pushing you from behind silently. It feels like a roller coaster or something. You kids are going to love it. All right. Want to move on to the markets?
Sure.
Even I have a limit how much I can talk about Chevy Bolt.
Hey, your buddy Elon's looking for a girlfriend.
Yes, he is. He's probably the world's most eligible bachelor. I don't know how to judge men very well and say, well, he's good looking or not, but I know that he's very smart and, you know, probably a lot of fun to hang around. What were we going to say?
He can only spend 10 hours a week with her, so he's putting that right out there.
That's nice.
You know, for all the applicants, because he's a really busy guy. He's getting ready to – he wants to talk to the president and the governor so that he can get out of his Chevy Volt and build the – I think he called it the Hyperloop between L.A. and San Francisco, 30 minutes. And he wants to do that. He needs Barack to loan him $60 billion to build it, I believe it is. Or is it $6 billion? Six or 60. I got the notes here somewhere.
It's probably six.
And he says he'll do it. He had his friends say he had a breakthrough this summer. He won't discuss. Oh my goodness! Look at this. Are you looking at my screen?
Yes.
I was poking around over here, but then I saw this. Can you? I was talking about this yesterday about the iPhone and how there's. The designer of the iPhone says that what they came up with on the 4, which is now the 5, that you're going to just have to live with that for many years because they believe that is the perfect design for the phone. Remember how the Mercedes used to have a timeless, classic look?
Mm-hmm.
You literally couldn't tell one year from the other because any body changes were just so minute, you couldn't notice them. Then all of a sudden they went crazy and started doing silly stuff with the compressor and all this other things.
Mm-hmm.
Look at this Mercedes. That's embarrassing.
How do you know that's a Mercedes?
Well,
you talking about the guy with the sitting in the little car?
No, David.
Oh, over there. I gotcha.
See the little logo?
Yes, I do. I was looking at the big picture in the center where I thought you were.
That was you. I was poking fun at you, and then I happened to glance over and see this, because that's David guys in his Chevy Volt. But anyway.
Yeah, there you are.
That's him beating the guy in the Cadillac this morning.
Thank you, Duane. I appreciate that.
No, look at this. I haven't seen this Mercedes. Have you?
That is not going to probably be sold out here for a while yet, but that's the one that is either the A class or the B class. And it may be there. They have a lot of stuff here that they haven't come out. But Mercedes has changed a number of features, and the car business is much more competitive than it used to be. And there are people that are crawling up Mercedes behind, you know, trying to take it from them. So,
Dean down in beautiful Cabo. By the way, Dean, you can't name your place Trader's Paradise because I've already got dibs on that. Dean says, buy a Scion. They are the best-built, most reliable car in existence. Plus, they have an ultra-high resale value. Tell David the Leafs are garbage.
Wait, what did he say? What car was the best?
The Scion.
Scion, okay.
S-C-I-O-N. I think that's the one that looks like a little cube.
It's a Toyota, yeah.
It looks like something SpongeBob would drive.
Okay.
David, when the inverter takes a dump in your Volt and it costs approximately $2,500 to replace, think of the money you saved in gas.
Well, you know, I'll tell you something else. the Volt doesn't have a, obviously, ordinary powertrain in it. It doesn't have hundreds of moving parts. It actually has one moving part. I think anytime you can reduce the number of moving parts and explosions going on in those moving parts from hundreds down to one, which is the rotor inside of the electric motor, that motor will last probably 700,000 or more miles by itself. The transmission, oh, there isn't one. It doesn't have a transmission. It's a single-speed gear reduction, so there's nothing to service in either your transmission or your motor. So we've just taken the majority of the components that would fail over 200,000 miles and extended them out to 750,000 miles with no servicing at all. So I would beg to differ. You might have to replace an electrical component in there, like an inverter, for $2,500. You could easily spend $2,500 over a few years after your any car is out of warranty, doing ordinary maintenance work to it, and obviously fixing parts that ultimately leak or break. Electric cars don't have that, and you can balance it back and forth. Everyone has their own take on what they want to, you know, how they what they want to drive, etc. But there's no, it's not an argument to discuss. I mean, the mere fact is that other than the battery, and the batteries will wear out in these cars over some period of time, those will get better as well. And 8 or 10 years from now, when your battery can only keep 70% of its charge or whatever it is, I think batteries will be dramatically less expensive then as well. And listen, nobody, the electric car market's very, very, very small right now. Very few people are taking them up. But more and more people are getting comfortable with the idea, and they're just a whole lot more fun to drive and more satisfying than, you know, Dean knows I've owned just about every kind of car that goes fast. I mean, that's, you know, I don't talk about it a lot, but he knows.
No, you
and
don't know.
I've been around the block with cars, and I'm telling you that electric cars are going to be the fastest accelerating and most satisfying cars to drive that we've ever produced. As they continue to get better and better at them, soon they're going to have in-wheel motors, motors inside each wheel, and they're going to be able to computer control them so that it's like all-wheel drive. I mean, it's going to go on and on and on, 1,000 foot-pounds of torque. There are going to be amazing things happening. So in the meantime,
every time I drive by one of those golf courses out in Sun City, I know those guys, they all got a big smile on their face.
They sure do, don't they? I wonder if that's because golf does that to you, or
no,
it's
the
it's
electric
the golf cart.
Cars they're driving. That's what it is.
Yeah. Exactly. Anyway, so Elon's looking for a date and looking for a woman. I know he broke up with whoever he was with, but I'm picturing his thing. I don't know, have any idea what he's talking about from you know, taking the San Francisco to California, whatever. But I'm picturing it like a mailing tube that you put in, you know, at the bank.
Yep.
Whoosh, and then you're just off and running because you can just go one after another, and you can just have mailing tube after mailing tube with people in it. Maybe it's something like that.
That's what he says. It's a tube. He won't give any other details.
Oh, he does say it's a tube?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's how I pictured it. That I pictured it just like a mailing tube being pushed by air.
Yep. That's what he says. It's a
that's
tube.
Funny.
So.
All right.
All right. Let's do these markets.
Well, let's do these markets. By the way, my friend Dean, who is in Cabo, who left the United States to stay there for at least a while, if not forever, he himself also has quite a bit of experience with cars, so I don't want to discount anything that he says. Not only was he a, obviously he had worked in the car industry in many different ways, but he also owned his own quarter-mile dragster, and I was at the track on a couple of occasions, I think, watching him, you know, go from zero to, you know, a quarter mile in, you know, 6 seconds or something. I mean, just really, really amazing fast performance. So he's, you know, he's been around the block with cars as well. So I want to give the props to him with regard to that.
This is the Scion. It's not that little cube car that I was thinking of. That's obviously something different.
Right, right. That's the new Scion,
this
right, exactly.
This is the Scion right here. A couple different
okay,
models.
So,
some of them,
yeah,
oh, wait, no,
different models.
Is.
That's Toyota's younger version car. That's to get the young people and all that stuff. Kind of cute. Okay, so let's talk. You want to start with the S&P today, and we'll see where
we... Yeah, we're at the top of a price channel that began back in May on a daily chart, so this is of some importance. We've tapped the top of this, you know, three times, and if we break out of this and hold outside of it, we're only We talked about this yesterday. We're only 100 points off of the all-time highs in the S&P 500.
That's correct.
So do we make it on this attempt right here? All we can do is wait and see. I know you're looking for, what did you say? Well, we already hit that price. You said 1475, right?
Yeah, we've been talking since mid-August that the market would advance from the 1400 level up to $1,475 as an initial target. Today on the, well, actually, the forecast was made on the September contract. The September contract today hit 1,474.75. So just one tick off of the 1,475 target. Now, we actually, at this point, you know, having completed that, we would expect a reaction. I told that to Bert this morning that we should expect a reaction off of 75. We're in the process of that reaction right now on the downside. Any further test of 75 to 77 on the upside will remain important. This forecast, for those of you who either have or know about reflected wave, who have reflected wave, or those of you who would be coming to the upcoming seminar, October 6th and 7th, this call was made with reflected wave. So knowing that the price would move from 1400 up to 1475, even though there's not a specific turning point being called right there, the fact is this is a reflected, this is part of reflected wave. And so a great example, great, beautiful example of the price portion of reflected wave at work, where the market would run to a distant number, like from 1400 to 75 up here. Now, we're calling for higher prices as well, but there would be a reaction from the 75 and later any test of 77. How they handle that level, which may or may not coincide with the lines that you showed on your chart, but roughly in that area, is going to be important. And then after that, breakout above that, as we talked about previously, the next level up is 1515. So all of this is, you know, we're going to trade and track all this. This is why, by the way, now remember, I've been telling on the program here for people to not short this market, to not, you know, intraday, that's fine, but to not get in the market short, holding and saying, well, you know, they're overbought on my indicators or whatever, and to be very careful to not pay attention to your indicators because this move was imminent and that you could be very hurt, you know, unnecessarily by this. And I'm glad that if I hope that if somebody was either in or planning on being in and short and saying, no, I think they're going down, I hope that at least tempered that because this is too big of a move. There's too much force at work. And as I described after the August 20th weekly deal, the top that we talked about, that if the market were to break out above 1425 prior to you doing a further weekly decline, it would indicate a much, much larger force at work, and the market would then, you know, go to the 75 and 77 level. So all of that's been completed, you know, roughly. I mean, they got within one tick of it today. I don't know how much more you need than that, but I would prefer, actually, I would prefer to see 75/77 be tested. Now, this is all based on the September contract. I do believe that all the contracts, you know, the current contract, the December, will likely complete all these numbers as well. But the forecast was made in the September contract, and so they've completed that. I would prefer to see 77 get tested. And then above that, with the usual pullbacks along the way, this is a much, you know, further away target or a pretty good distant target would be 1515. I think all of that's going to end up being in the cards. And this is the whole business of the market going up could be encapsulated in a simple outlook, which you could say, listen, it's a election year, and the market tends to want to be bullish in an election year. And we've mentioned that several times on the radio. The timing of these moves, the imminency, whatever the word is, of the fact of the move going up and all that stuff gets, you know, that gets more into technical work. But just knowing that quite often and most of the times election years are bullish. And the interesting thing about this election year, just as a general overview, is how bad the news has been. It's really been awful for just years, for several years. In fact, pretty much for the whole time we've had the administration. And that bad news has been the new good news. The market has advanced on that news since day one. I mean, we have just had one, you know, bad news after another. We just had another bit of bad news. The government is going, I mean, depends on how you think, the government's going to print $85 billion per month for the foreseeable future. I don't know if you quite, you know, you got to let that number sink in a little bit. Our government is going to print $85 billion a month and flood that into the system. I'm still not sure I understand, and I know Dwayne talked about this yesterday, about it actually is an illusion, but within the limits of the dream that they have that this is going to make things better, I'd really like to hear from somebody, and we did hear a little bit yesterday about how this directly, I understand it went to the banks, and the banks then might loan it out, and that spurs the economy, but it seems awfully, you know, second and third tier down the road in order to get the economy stimulated. It, you know, call me silly, but it seems to me if you're going to do that, you would be much wiser just giving people money to spend. Just put it in the hands of the people. You know, I mean, then those people go out and they stimulate the economy, they spend that money, or they do something with it. Like I said, they buy their new widescreen TV, or they go make a home purchase, or whatever they're going to do, and the economy gets stimulated by doing that. You can see the effect of this on the dollar already, the actual U.S. currency as it's traded. It's down substantially. And so this devalues the dollar, and it's going to continue to do so at the tune of $85 billion a month until the economy comes back. So is the $85 billion alone, or is it $85 billion worth of new money that actually just is now new money, that is just in the economy? Whose money is that? Does anybody know?
The Fed prints it and loans it to the United States of America at a quote-unquote fair interest rate. That's mm-hmm. how that works.
Okay.
The Federal Reserve has nothing to do with the government. They are a private corporation. And if someone wanted to spend $8, they could get a one-month subscription to Netflix, and they could go to the documentary section of Netflix, and you could spend the next few days watching any number of documentaries that fully explain who and what the Fed is, how it came into being, what the printing of the money means, what the long-term ramifications are, what the short-term impact is. Or you can go to YouTube and watch that little cartoon we showed 2 years ago about the Ben Bernanke and the Goldman Sachs and the printing of the money. And you'll come away just as educated from that, but it might be more entertaining. I could recommend both. You know what? I'm going to put the link to the cartoon in the blog tonight, the little video that you mm-hmm. can watch. It's about 20 minutes. It's really... it was well done. It's entertaining and extremely informative. But Netflix is just chock full of documentaries that talk. Most people, when they hear the Fed, I mean, that sounds like a government entity. It's the government. It's the Fed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the Federal Reserve is not the government. But that's a huge discussion, and the audience mm-hmm. is full of people that know what I'm talking about. Michael says, why can't people check out and see that the Federal Reserve is not federal? Why are they allowed to do this? Well, I mean, all you got to do is just Google it. It's all right there. It's not a conspiracy theory that it's not part of the government. It's just a fact.
Yeah, they don't hide that fact either. I mean, that's been around since junior high. I mean, that knowledge, I remember being in junior high and hearing that the Fed is not part of...
Well, it's been around since it was created on The Train to Jekyll Island, which is a great book, and I recommend that anyone who has an interest in this read it. There's also there's a documentary done based on that book mm-hmm. when the idea of the Fed was cooked up and put into action. Yeah, guys, it's not conspiracy. It's history. It's it's the history of our country. And yesterday was just another blow. Now there are many who you know think that the Fed putting their foot on the accelerator and making the statement that we will not take our foot off the accelerator until the economy is better. There are many highly educated people that will tell you that that is the absolute correct
best thing
to do.
That's who I want to hear from. That's who I want to hear from. I want to hear from that guy. And if that guy's in the audience, I would love for you to call in and tell us how it works and why it's worth doing and why in 10 months when we have nearly $1 trillion more added to our debt that it would be worth doing. Because the economy is, obviously the economy is down, but I'd like to hear a more direct connection to why that money is going to make businesses open, make people go to work, and, you know, create jobs and all that stuff. To me, putting aside any conspiracy or anything else, it just appears that it's the government again believing that they create jobs, that they create the economy, when it's not that way at all. It's businesses and entrepreneurs and workers that create all that, and people with vision who see an opportunity and seize upon it. That's how it goes. That's how it works. The government, this government especially, wants to believe that they're in command of everything. You didn't build that means you think you built your business, but in reality, you needed us, government, in order to have done that. So really, you didn't do much of that. We did it. We're the ones who built the roads and the this and the that. And it's such an idiotic statement, of course, because the government doesn't build roads either. They hire businesses to build roads. There's not a, you know, that's how it works. So they had to go to a business even to build the roads. So I don't know. They contract that work out. So in the end, I would really like to get a very clear explanation from the person, like you say, Duane, the guy that really says, no, this is exactly right. This is the perfect thing to be doing. We flood the, you know, channels with money, whatever that means. What channels? Where's the money go? Where's it sitting now? You know, they print it off and it gets carried to where? Does it just get deposited in a bank? Does it? What exactly happens?
Well, it never actually gets printed. There's no printing press actually churning out $80 billion bills today. It's
digital money.
It's moving decimal points. But you know, something the Fed could have done yesterday, rather than saying we're going to print all this money, which is going to have little or no impact on the man in the street. What they could have done, they could have said, okay, Mr. Banker, okay, you're already flush with cash because you deposit it back with us every night and we pay you interest on that overnight. And we're not going to do that anymore. We're no longer going to let you just play it safe with this money, the money that we've already quote-unquote printed, the money that we've already flooded into the system, the liquidity that we've already artificially created. What we're going to do is, instead of paying you interest on the money you deposit every night, we're going to actually penalize you for your excess cash. Bankers would be chasing people down in the street to find a man with, you know, some decent credit, a good idea, and an honest look in his eye. Mm-hmm. That they could put together a loan package, launch a business, and create jobs. So what we're gonna jam the system with more liquidity. We're not fixing the problem. The problem is the banks are extremely hesitant to loan money. So pressure should have been applied, you know, to the bankers. You know, all this money you're depositing every night and earning this little interest on because it's safe, that's mm-hmm. over. Not only will we no longer pay you interest on that money, we're going to penalize you on the excess. Now, that would have stimulated the economy. That would have had bankers out today loaning money and men with good ideas, solid business plans, would be going out leasing properties, building buildings, interviewing applicants, doing
and they
all
kinds
of things.
They would be doing that because they don't want to be penalized by the bank on their money? the sitting
yes,
money.
Yes, yeah, the banks would sit. Yeah, because if if the bankers are penalized on this excess money that's been made available to them, well, then if they don't loan it, they're going to be penalized out of a job. They're going to join the ranks of the unemployed.
Yeah, I would hope, though, that that wouldn't lead to another what we did with the housing, which is lending money to people who don't have the ability to run a business or to pay it back.
Absolutely not. I said men with a solid business plan.
Oh, got it. Gotcha.
A man with reasonably good credit. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they didn't take that approach. They took the other approach, which...
Yeah, this is the classic approach, which is what, however it works. One thing that I would suggest, and then we'll get back to the markets here... One thing that I would suggest would be the time-tested approach, which is get out of the way, stop regulating, stop jamming all of this onto the small businessman, stop scaring people with the prospect of higher and higher taxes, open up the channels that entrepreneurs are looking for by not scaring them and not putting people into fear that, you know, they're going to have to pay X number of dollars now on their employees over, you know, the healthcare thing, the whole thing. You have to somehow give people an incentive and an opportunity, and you'd be amazed at what would happen when you do that. In fact, all of the great things that have happened in America in terms of its economy has come from entrepreneurs and workers seeing opportunities and getting together and being able to take them. The businesses are not employing people or letting people go, primarily because the entrepreneurs and the people who do have money right now aren't willing to go into business right now in the environment that we're in, and there's not enough incentive there for them, and there's quite a few things to make them scared, which many of those things has to do with Obama's administration's attitude towards, clearly spoken attitude towards, small business and people who are successful in general. How are we going to be successful when the President of the United States denigrates successful people on TV, in speeches? How are we supposed to get excited about, you know, doing that? There's a lot of pieces that have to be corrected in order for this stuff to work, and one of them is that we have to feel that we're not going to be penalized in some way with our investment. You know, the president keeps talking about protecting the middle class and making sure the middle class, and, you know, he's shrunk down, obviously, who the middle class is by making you rich if you have an income more than $250 a year. And $250 is a nice income, there's no question about it, but it ain't rich. And having said that, if you're one of the middle class, and I'm in the middle class, if you're one of the middle class that believes that, you know, you're going to be protected, I have news for you. If you don't get a job pretty soon, you're not going to be in the middle class. So something has to be done about the jobs, otherwise the middle class is going to fall out of being the middle class, and they're going to be poor. So someone better get on the ball here, and I realize they think they're doing it now with the $85 billion a month, but just remember, that's $1 trillion in 12 months.
Well, what's going to have to happen is some Americans with stones and some money are going to have to step up and say, you know what? I'm not going to live in fear of the government anymore. I'm not going to live in the fear that they're going to tax me and hurt me. I'm going to take this money that I have, and I'm going to go, despite the government, I'm going to go do what Americans do, and that's great things. I'm going to build a business. I'm going to do whatever. And, you know, when the tax man comes, I'll hire the best accountants. I'll hire the best attorneys. And whatever I'm told I have to pay, then that's what I'll pay. That's what it's going to take, because government cannot fix this problem. Only the American people
That's right.
can fix this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so I speak to everyone who is sitting on cash, and you're afraid to invest it, you're afraid to bring it out and blow the dust off of it and put it to work and build a company and create jobs. Shame on you. Stop living in fear of this president. Worst case scenario, he's gone in 4 years. Okay, we get a shot at somebody different in 4 years. So gut it out, you know, or stop complaining. Do something or stop complaining, period. That's it. Do something or stop complaining. I rest my case.
Well, there we are. Okay, so let me sign something here real quick, and then we'll get back to the markets. Okay, so S&P, I don't have anything really else to add. We're underway right now with the reaction off of the 75 completion, and there will be some other important trades, I'm quite confident, over the next several months here that the volatility is back, and we're going to see much better trading than we did in the summertime. So, you know, again, I just want to make a note that the volatility itself is cyclical. The market comes and goes with that. It's typical for the volatility to go down dramatically in the summertime. It did, and it's back now, and we'll start seeing some better trades. So we'll move on from there. Let's take a quick look at the gold market, which we're going to show, you know, now that we feel better about gold, during we have another Reflected Wave webinar, our last one, coming up on Tuesday of next week. So if you'd like to come to that, you can check that out by going to our traders blog. We'll go into this a little bit later, but we're going to show our current gold position with that we've been holding for more than 2 years. It's inching in on 2.5 to 3 years now. I'm not exactly sure how long it's been. It actually, I'll tell you when we got in it. We got in it back in, it's 3 years. It's almost 4 years, actually. It's 3.5, if I'm getting this right. I think it was back in 2009 that we got in. And we've been holding it. We've got, obviously, a very decent gain in this position that now, because of the rally, has recaptured some of its previous glory. We'll show that statement, and we're going to book something in the gold market here. We haven't booked anything just yet. I wanted to let, you know, if the big boys, you know, I'm just playing around here, but you know, who was it? George Soros and the big guys. If they haven't gotten out yet, well, why should I? No, but we trade a little more seriously than that. We're actually probably on Monday going to book something in that position, and then on Tuesday, we'll, if we can get that statement, because they really only print it once a month, but I'll get the most recent one and show that to you along with our most recent option statement, because we did not, in spite of having called the move up, you know, from 1,400 to 75, we didn't really add a lot to our options positions because the market did, the way they got up there was more difficult to trade. I mean, that's just the fact. It wasn't as easy as some trades. That's just the way it works out sometimes. So whatever existing options positions we had on stayed on, and those are now obviously well in our favor. So we're going to show the increase in our trading statement for that. All of this is based on larger reflected wave tops and bottoms. So a person could do similar things to what we're doing with options. But, you know, you can't promise anybody that they're going to make money. What you can promise is that they'll know how to do what you're doing, and then it's up to them to put the trade together and to, you know, keep their psychology in order and all the things that we talk about for trading. So I don't have anything really to add to gold except that it's had just a tremendously nice move. If it's really true that George Soros and some of these other people got in, it's a wonderful, wonderful trade. I would, you know, my hat's off to them for doing that and having a nice move up. And we'll talk about this further, of course, into next week. And there will be some important trades that are coming in the gold market as well, some what we think would be roadmaps. Let's move over to Facebook, because this is another, I don't know if Dwayne had talked about this, but we had talked about, we didn't put a trade out for this, but just for talks, you know, just for saying stuff on the radio about it, we talked that we didn't want to do anything with this stock until it got up to 2160 to 2170 on the upside. If we were going to do anything with it, it would be from those points. They reached those points today. Actually, yesterday's high was 2148, so they didn't quite reach it yesterday. They got to it today. They're above it right now. Dwayne, what do we have going on Facebook with, is this still just the Zuckerberg bounce?
There was some other little bit of news. They changed their ad exchange. They talked about that yesterday. They changed the logo. It's not a new product. It's just kind of a fresh spin on it. I don't know if he's made any additional comments. I didn't see any news. I scanned the headlines this morning, so if someone knows anything about any new Facebook news, feel free to share it with us. But I don't.
Yeah, they're up substantially today. Yeah, they're up substantially today. They have a very nice up $1.07. You know, for a stock that's trading at $21, that's a pretty good move.
No, this move has been, since he came out and made his statement back here, we gapped higher on the open the following day, and we had looks like we had a down day yesterday slightly, but then we moved higher today. So
yeah,
I'm going to guess that probably the spin they put on this thing they call the ad exchange, and they changed their logo because they have to work really hard to monetize their advertising stream because that's the only revenue that they have. You don't pay to be a member. You know, there's no cost to have a Facebook account and to do all the things, share pictures and whatnot. There's no fees of any kind. So the only way currently that they have to generate revenue is through advertising.
Yeah. Well, it's a beautiful move. That's another one that's had a really nice move up, and we'll continue to watch that. I think that will become tradable at some point. I mean, you know, set up a bull where you can really state with some good certainty what's going to happen. Let's take a look again now at the Treasury bond market. Again, I've mentioned on a number of occasions the importance of what we call reflected wave breakouts, and I do want to say that every one of those is not going to run as far as the bonds. But we did say on the program that short positions would be indicated because they put in a bottom on September 7th, they broke below that, and this particular kind of breakout will normally have a sizable advance, and they have really tanked the bond market. This is, of course, in concert with the news that came out, but quite often the market precedes the news, and these kinds of setups technically are in play.
Are you still in September on this?
I am. I may not have. Maybe it's time for me to change it. But
I don't know. Bert, are you there? Should we be in December yet?
You want to be in December.
We do?
Okay, so we'll roll that.
I'll change it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so Euro, of course, is again dramatically higher because dollar is down, and you know the connection between those two. We'll talk about the Euro next week because it's at a critical juncture. If they do, with this big move up, we may actually step up to a well, we'll see. Let's wait and see what happens next week. Let's rather than confuse it right now by me throwing anything new out there, we'll take a look next week at where we are with the Euro.
Hey, David?
Sure.
Make sure it's December Euro.
Okay, I will. I'll change all that this weekend. We haven't rolled in this yet either. So silver continues to move higher. I haven't talked a lot about this, but we're long, if you look at our statements, both gold and silver. So both of these have had you know, tremendous advances off. Silver, for people who want to watch silver, there is an important level that they just reached today, $347, or excuse me, is it $34.75. Is the level, and I think today's high is 30, it's exactly that. Now, this level happens to be important in terms of the market being able to react to that level on the downside or close above it. So this is interesting, and this is why I'm saying we're pretty close to being at the point where we're going to book something in this. We want to let it, this kind of an explosive move normally will run further than most people think. We put ourselves in the same category as most people, so it'll probably run further than we think, but that would be one of the areas that we would be concerned about, would be the 34.75 level. Let's see, further, the crude oil market, they broke out. We talked about the breakout occurring on September 13th, and it did, and they continued the move up. So we'll wait. We still believe, like I talked about the other day, that on we're very close to a very important top
hit
in this market.
Today. We hit $100 today. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've seen $100.
Over here back in May.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, no doubt. And so I'm not going to add anything to that. We've given out our call for that. So let's let them – they're obviously above the 98.58 that we had forecast for the month of September and so on. So let's let them put that in, and we'll talk about crude next week because this would be a longer-term setup we're talking about. We did have a potential for a short-term trade, but the market needed to get below a certain level. It stayed above that level, and so there was no trade taken with that. Going back to Elon Musk and his Tesla Motors, this, of course, is a stock that we've talked about since last week, stating that this week should touch $27.99 and that it would reverse on this week and have an initial $2 move up and then another $2. So a total of $4 would come from this stock on the downside. So that means that we're looking for this stock to continue higher up to $31.29. Today's high so far has been $30.45. So we continue to look for higher prices multi-week advance off of this bottom. This was a good example, again, of the same stuff we talk about in terms of timing, reflected wave, et cetera, in being able to know when a reversal is going to take place. And it doesn't mean that you necessarily would know how to trade it, but in many cases, because sometimes I don't know how to trade it. Sometimes the market comes up and, you know, there's a setup there and you just say, listen, I'm not sure what to do here. I know it's going higher, but I don't know if I should just buy the thing right now or should I wait for a pullback or what exactly do I do? In many cases, I do know what to do, but honestly, there's plenty of times where you say, I'm just not sure what to do with this. And in those cases, if the indication is strong, you just buy the market. And that's what I told somebody on the radio program yesterday. Just simply, there's too many good forces at work here. You don't want to wait and fool around with this. Just buy it. And I don't know who that was, but I want to give out that you know, you would want to continue holding this up to at or near 31.29. As a matter of fact, I think it would be wise to say that when they hit $31, you would take, you have to book something at that point. Now, they haven't even really gotten near that yet today. They got to $30.45. So we have a ways to go yet with regard to Tesla. As always, no matter how confident you or myself or anybody else is, you have to trade with stops, risk management, the whole thing. And don't kid yourself, and no matter how good you've done in a period of time, that you don't need the stops anymore because you have it. Never let yourself get into that, because it only takes one really bad trade to, you know, blow it all. And if you read books like Market Wizards, which was written now a million years ago, there's a whole bunch of those guys that are not trading anymore. Can you guess why? Anybody have a guess why some of the traders that were written up as some of the greatest traders are no longer trading? It's not because they decided to retire. It's because they were wiped out by putting positions on, being very confident, and not using risk management. That's why. At least three of them in that book that happened to since that book was written. So it happens to pros, and it can happen to anybody. Risk management isn't a punishment you have to tolerate. It's an edge that you have. It's the ability to protect yourself in spite of the fact that you might be small, medium, or large in the market. And it's not something that you can do in every type of investment. Just snap your fingers and get out. You know, a lot of times it's very difficult to do that. Go ask people with real estate, you know, before the crash. It's very difficult. So the market gives us that ability. So anyway, so we're looking for higher prices still in Tesla. So, you know, if somebody was to ask me what to do, I would consider, or I would continuing to hold. We talked about Bidu, B-I-D-U. We forecast that this week would mark a bottom in Bidu and that we wanted to see the market above 107.69 and that the market would have a multi-week advance. Go check out Bidu. It's up $5.43 just today. Just today alone. From the low that it made, our entry level that we talked about was the 107.69 to slightly lower. The low that they made was 106.80, and they're trading right now at 115.19. Very, very nice reversal. This is another good example of timing the market and being able to take advantage of that edge. There's many different kinds of edges you can have in the market. Timing is just one of them. but you can specialize in one of these edges, and that's what we do with Reflected Wave. We specialize in that edge, and it gives you a very high probability, or can give you a very high probability, of a trade happening. That stock, somebody asked us about that, BIDU.
Might have been so Francine. She wants to know if you have a target on it.
Well, they've already reached, thank you, Francine and Duane, they've already reached the first target that we would have had. We didn't talk about one at the time, but the very first one, let me give you the exact number. Give me just a moment here, because we never really even, we just knew that a big move was coming on a reversal for the week of September 10th. But if you give me a moment, I'll give you exactly what the target would be under normal conditions. And these are pretty normal. So we'd be looking for, one moment for what we're looking for, I would have been saying 114.59. We're trading at 115.16. So 114.59 would have been the first target, and we've completed that. And at that point, I would want somebody to seriously consider taking a good portion of their gains. But I do want to say that because of the nature of the setup, that there is a possibility. I do expect a reaction off this level, even though we're above it. Normally, you would probably see a reaction here, and then the possibility for further advance. Normally, this would be a multi-week type of deal in BIDU. So if you were in it, my suggestion would be to book something at or near 114.59. We're above that now, and I hope if Francine or somebody else was in it, that's very nice. Makes me feel good. See if there's anything else here we have on that chart. We're still talking about crude oil. Again, I just want to mention the for a September top in crude oil. So now, you know, with regard to my preference on this, this is different than a forecast, but I do have some preferences. I could trade it short based on other indications, but my preference would be that we would see crude test 102.90 area. Now, that's quite a ways from where we are now. That's another $4 up. That would be my preference. I would feel more comfortable had that occurred. It doesn't absolutely have to occur, but that's my preference. So as we get into next week and closer to the ending of September, we'll talk more about the setups for crude. But this is going to be a very important reversal in this market. So, okay, we have a few other, Duane, anything you want to add on the crude or anything of this that we're talking about as I'm waiting for my charts to
No, populate? James had a question. Do you have Monday as a Reflected Wave daily top for Tesla?
Let me go back over there just a second here. I don't know, but I'll tell you. just one second here. I'd already switched over, so just... Okay, so I don't, but you might want to call me, James, if you want to. Give us a toll-free 888-231-4702, and we can go into it, and I'll take a, you know, we'll cover that with you. So please give me a call if you want to. You're more than welcome to. Let's move over real quick to the other markets, and then I'll scoot along here. The dollar, of course, is being, you know, smashed. So I would avoid that market just for the time being, unless you happen to, you know, be short. There's a few things I saw here that I wanted to talk about. Oh, here's one. Okay, this is kind of interesting. This is, again, it's interesting how the markets play out these different scenarios kind of semi-simultaneously. You wouldn't make a connection between crude oil and cocoa, and I don't make any connection between crude oil and cocoa. We're in the December cocoa contract. But there is a trade that's setting up in September and December cocoa that you might want to consider, and that would be this market into early next week. If we were to break below, take a look at today's low. It's either 2616 or 261. I'm not sure if Bert knows or somebody knows how to read the decimal point correctly in this, but let's say it's 261. Let's just say that's where it is. If it were to break below that and hourly or daily closes below that anytime at this point forward, I especially like hourly closes below. If we get below that, in fact, let's even lower the number a little bit. Let's make it, you know, 261.7 or something, or 261.2, something below today's low. a little reasonable amount to below today's low. If that happens anytime between now and early next week, just go short. And you can trade this down to at or near $2.56. I have no idea how much money that is, how many points that is, how much coffee you can make with that, what flavor the coffee would be, whether it would be a latte or a mocha. But it is a trade. So, okay. Oh, Bert.
Yeah. Okay, Coco, that would mean, all right, first of all, Dwayne, I pull up.
What, Dwayne, what are you giggling at?
CC.
CC.
All right, dash MZ. There you go. Click that first one. All right, that's the chart. Now, second of all, David, it's 2616.
Okay.
Anything below 2616 would yield 2056.
Yeah, and I would really prefer to go 2610 or something to start. Now, let's get it below 2610 just to be sure. This isn't a market we deal with every day, but this is something nice. This would lead into next week. It may require, probably would require, an overnight position, and I would want you to book something prior to them reaching the 2567. Oops, I'm sorry. The 2566 level. Book something prior to that. Don't make them go there before you take anything off. Trade like you're wrong, even though you're right. So, you know, book it. Book some gains. You don't have to really trade like you're wrong, but, you know, protect yourself. Make sure you take something on the way down. But I like this setup. This is similar to what we saw setting up in the crude before they broke out.
And just so everyone knows, the monetarily, that would be $10 a point. So if David's target is 2560, you know, just do the math. If you sell it underneath 2610, that's about $500. Okay?
Mm-hmm. If you make $500, you know, you can send me 50 of it. It'll be fun. I'm okay with that. Okay, now I'm joking, by the way. Don't spend any money because I can get myself a lot of trouble with that. So, okay, we'll move on past natural gas. We had the big reflected wave bottom in natural gas that we forecast for the week of August 27th. And then, listen, and then we had a very important daily bottom subsequent to that. That made us put out our roadmap for the big move up in natural gas. We know several people that were in it. I'm delighted to hear that they did take advantage of this move up in natural gas. So this was a good example of utilizing reflected wave to catch a larger move, an explosive type of setup. Bert, did you do anything with natural gas or no? Were you just watching? Or?
Personally, I didn't. Okay. Some of the guys were aggressive and did get in.
Okay, good.
I know Mark did, and a few other guys. They got good. in at real good prices.
That's delightful, and they had a nice move. And like we said, the target we had that we wanted to be out by was $301 or $3010, whatever the decimal is in that. And they did go slightly higher. They got up to $3066, and now they're going to close the week below $3010 or $301, whatever it is. And that is the weaker position, at least short term. So that's why I think it was wise to exit something there. If somebody wants to be aggressive and all that, that's on you, and you can maybe trend follow it up. But I think the trade pretty much is over. So we'll go from there. Let's move on past that. Somebody had asked us about this Green Mountain Coffee Roasters at some point, and I am watching it. I don't know who that was, but that's GMCR, Green Mountain Coffee Roasters. I've looked at this stock, and actually this may be something that has some tradability to it, so we're going to keep an eye on this. I'm still watching this, along with Yahoo as well. So we'll talk about that a little later, you know, as time goes by. I know most people don't trade stocks, but stocks are wonderful. They can be a very big part of your portfolio. Copper today just storming up higher. The copper market has just blown through everything. We don't talk a lot about copper, but we've been watching it here. Big, big explosive moves in copper, along with the other metals. You know, we haven't talked about corn in a while here. I would like to say that at the very least, if corn closes today, this would be... this is a weekly thing. Okay. Well, let me just give you a generality then. Okay. This week should be important in corn as a bottom. This is the week of September 10th. This is not reflected wave. But what this is that because they're closing above $7.69, which is important on the week, that would mean that we'd be looking to go long in corn. So rather than me make a direct forecast and say, well, you know, go long and go do this, my suggestion is, in general, is start looking for the long side in your own methodology. You could also use Duane and Michael's material to get in at a particular point, a pullback on the way up. You could use reflected wave to do the same. Whatever methodology you want to use, but start seeing if you're starting to get some long signals in corn into next week. Let them open next week above, you know, 77.10 or something, or maybe, you know, whatever the number was we just talked, 76.96, 77 area. Let them open above that, watch them trade a little bit, and then start putting positions on. And then you could see a nice move in corn here. So something for you to consider. It's more David, general.
I'm sorry, David, is that December corn?
It's the current month, whatever it is. If that's December's the current month, go ahead and do it in December.
What's the last price you have?
78.64.
All right, so 786.5 is September. So do me a favor, can you go look at that? Nobody trade September corn. Do December corn.
December corn.
Yeah.
Yeah, just do it in December corn. And put it this way, I mean, one way you could do it is maybe because the price that I'm giving you down there, I'm not sure how to calculate that properly, this, you know, 77, but
$7.70 a bushel.
Yeah, just next week start looking for the long side in this market. That's all. They're going to close above the critical level here rather than trying to do the conversion and the whole thing. Just tomorrow, you know, next week, look to keep an eye on this on the long side. See if you get your own long signals. I don't have a direct super big forecast for it, but I like the idea of there's going to be some movement there that you can probably take advantage of. Let me think if there's anything else. I think that's it. I think we've covered it all. Let me just see that we haven't talked about soybeans in a long time. Okay. Well, we can't talk about this now because it already happened. It was a great little setup there and we didn't see it. So we'll leave that alone. But soybeans are starting to get back and forth volatile and that's good. That'll help. Over the next several weeks, we can probably do something with that. So, Duane, that's everything I have. We've talked about the Chevy Volt. I've complained about the administration. I've expressed concern over spending 85 or whatever it is, billion a month in trying to start the economy and not understanding it. Bert got online and corrected what symbols we're using. Some people asked questions. That's what we normally do on this program. That's how we roll, and we've done all of that today. And I'd like to wish everybody a really nice weekend and a wonderful, relaxing time over the weekend to do whatever it is that you want to do and enjoy your life. Get away from trading for a little bit. A clear mind, sometimes a clear mind answers questions that a busy and tightly wound up mind could never answer. So, you know, if you take some time and really just get into something else, you'll find. Have you ever noticed, I just want to mention this, and then, Duane, I'll get out of your hair here, but you've got some issue going on in your life, and let's say you go to the gym, you know, because that's a physical thing. And, you know, it's on your mind, but then you start exercising. And before you know it, you notice already that because you're exercising, somehow it changes your mind. You're no longer really thinking so much about your problem. You're in your physical center now. You were in your mental center more, and now you're more in your physical center. And have you ever noticed that just you may not have a solution to the problem, it still is a problem to you, but because you left that center, you moved into another center, your physical parts, and you're working out and you're in that whole mode, because you're no longer in the mental center, later when you come back to it, you're much clearer on it, and it feels like you can approach it much better than you could all wrapped up in it. And I think there's a big clue in that once you're wrapped up in a problem, it gets to be more difficult to solve, you know, whether it's a personal problem or whatever. And so you may find that same thing's true with trading and looking for setups and trying to make money. We got a phone call the other day from a woman, very nice lady, who was really trying to you know, I've got to make some money trading. I've really got to get a system that, you know, helps me make some money. And, you know, just very much saying that over and over again. And the unfortunate truth is that you can't think clearly when that's all you have on your mind. You know, I've got to make some money. You know, my husband lost his job. We've got to do something here. You know, you guys know that. That's just not going to work. You really have to have some clarity and some distance, some relaxation, and a kind of an affection for the whole process of trading and the whole business of it. It's difficult to have all that when you're wrapped up tightly as, you know, like a whole little thing wrapped up real tight, emotionally and mentally and all that stuff. There has to be some distance and some relaxation. If you have that, if you don't have that, it's harder to do this successfully. It just is. You know, Tiger Woods knows how to golf really well. And he knew how to golf really well before he had sex with over 100 women while he was married. He knew how to golf well while he was doing that activity. And he knew how to golf well after he got caught. Take a look at his golfing before, during, and after. And after, his golfing wasn't so hot, was it? He didn't golf so good after he got busted. And the reason he didn't golf so good wasn't because he forgot how to golf. He wasn't golfing so good because his state of mind. He was all wrapped up and having had to, you know, do his mea culpa publicly and have everyone find out. So he was all messed up in his head. And look at the results on his golf game. It was a whole year before he, I don't know how long, I don't follow golf that much, but look how long it was before he could recenter himself into the place that he should be, generally speaking, whatever his centering is. It took quite some time. And look what it did to his game. One of the best golfers of all time. He didn't lose any of his physical skills. It was all mental. You don't need any more proof than that. I mean, forget the reasoning and the whole dirty business of it, but just take a look. His mental game was off, and his actual game completely collapsed under that. I mean, he wasn't doing anything like he used to do. So that's a great example of how the mental affects the physical, and that is true in trading and in pretty much every other area of your life. So it's very important to take a break, clear your head, and reapproach this if you have, you know, issues coming with it. One thing I've said on the program, and then I'll let you go. I know I keep saying that. No, I'll let you go in a minute here. One thing I have said so many times is that I struggled for many years with the same kind of deal, with trying to just beat my head into the ground on trying to make money on this. And it was only when I got past that that I could actually see my way. I could actually see a future in trading and actually being able to do this and get ahead of my problems and my desires and get ahead of the push to grind myself into getting this right. And getting it right for me meant making money. And so, you know, I really think you ought to take a look if you are grinding on that, because it's money as a motivation is fine. I mean, as a distant motivation, hey, I want to do better in my life or whatever. I want to buy a better place to live or whatever. That's fine. But when it comes to actually doing the trading, it made a big difference to me. I can't guarantee you that it'll make a big difference to everybody, but I had put so much emphasis on the money side that it really helped to get off of that completely and give myself some of that clear air that you can just relax and look at it, and you're not even thinking I have to trade or do anything. You're just watching the markets, just looking at it, and when something rolls around your way that looks real good, you get a little more interested, and then you cut, you know, man, you know, we might be able to pull something off with this, might be able to trade this. They just make it easy for you, you know, for you, whatever that easy thing is. Then you start putting in. That's exactly how I think in terms of forecasting when I come on the radio. I don't sit here grinding and saying, oh, I'm going to be on the radio, I better go get myself a forecast. I'm just watching the markets and waiting for it to come up, because there's periods of time where you don't hear me talk much about any market. It's like, no, don't got nothing on that, nothing, sorry. Because I honestly don't care that I give it or not give it. What I care about is if it's quality. And when they give it, I put it out. And sometimes they give you a whole bunch of them in a row, and sometimes you have to wait. That's how I trade, just like that. Just like you see me give the forecast out. I just keep coming here on the program, waiting for the good stuff to come. And when it comes, I give it to you, and that's how we trade it. And even then, we don't trade all of it, but it depends on conditions and, you know, whether we miss the entry and, you know, whatever, all the stuff that can happen in trading. But we trade enough of it And so anyway, the last thing I want to say is I do want to invite people. We have one last webinar for Reflected Wave next week on Tuesday. They can go to our Traders blog on PageTrader for the Tuesday webinar for Reflected Wave. If you go to PageTrader.com, click on the Traders blog. That'll bring you to a little link, and you can click on that and come. Bert Schlichter will be at that as well, and we're going to talk. I'm going to show our most recent statements for our options, which I'm delighted to tell you has gone up substantially because of this big run-up here. And we haven't taken all those positions off yet, but by Monday we will have, and by Tuesday I'll be able to show you that. We'll show our gold statement now that we're not shaking in our boots because gold and silver both have rallied. All of these, our gold position, the whole position that we've been in for 2.5 years, the whole shooting match was based on Reflected Wave. That's what I'm telling you. The whole shooting match was our entry was based upon a big monthly Reflected Wave bottom. And we bought, and that was, by the way, 10 years or 9 years after the rally started in gold. We missed a whole bunch of entries. We just could not get in. They just kept running them and running them and running them. And just so you can take a look at this for yourself over the weekend, if you so care to do so, I'm going to show you, or you can take a look on your own charts, the October of 08 bottom in gold. That's what triggered our current long position, which is worth hundreds of thousands of dollars right now. We've been in that trade. And we held that position beyond what we thought we would have held it. Normally, if it was just a trade, a normal trade, we would have been out of it. But because the market was in a bigger trend, bigger than what any turning point would have ended it at that point, you know, like a monthly top or something, we held. And it's been hard. It has not been easy. Even though a good part of the time the market was rallying very well, it's been a long time and it wears on you. Having said that, the entry was based on a single thing, a big Reflected Wave bottom, and we bought it, and we're still holding. So how are you doing? So you get a chance to see that statement as well, where we are right now, and we are going to exit some of that stuff, as I've talked to you about this before. So that's Tuesday, 15 minutes after the S&P closes, which is 1:30 Pacific time, 3:30, or excuse me, 1:30 Pacific time, 3:30 Chicago time. Yeah, and we'll talk about it as we get a little bit closer. So if you want to see that, anybody has an interest in coming, you don't have to pay anything to do that. You just come to the webinar and watch. And this is all related to our upcoming seminar, October 6th and 7th at the Mirage Hotel. So if you have an interest, come on along and would like to, I'll show you what we do. And again, everyone has a different viewpoint on how they like to trade and what means something to them. Turning points may or may not mean a lot to you. It means a lot to us, and we've used that little bit. We specialize in that edge. So there you are, Dwayne. That's everything I've got for today.
All righty. Sounds good. David, yeah. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Dwayne. You have a great weekend, and maybe I'll see you in Trader's Paradise.
Maybe you will. I hope so. Take care. Have a great afternoon.
Okay, you too. See you, Bert.
Guys, there goes another week of broadcast history at CFRN. Thanks for the part you've played in being a great audience. Not a lot left to say here on the ES. To Friday afternoon, we had a third round of quantitative easing dished out yesterday. I will put a link to that little cartoon video that explains quantitative easing. It's brilliantly done. It's entertaining. It's humorous. It's factual. It's informative. And those of you that were around a couple years ago, we showed it on a number of occasions on the show. It's about 20 minutes long, but it's well, you'll come away from it. You may think you know all there is to know about quantitative easing. I promise you, even if you're an economist, you'll come away from this little cartoon knowing a little something you didn't already know. So watch for that on the blog tonight. And to go to the blog, it's simply cfrn.net. And on the right-hand side of any page, you'll see Visit Our Blog. Click it and go. If you click up on the navigation bar at the top, E-mini radio blog, that takes you to like a table of contents. You can click on an individual post, or you can view all of the most recent posts, whatever you choose. And if you want to take the free trial, cfrn.net/apply. When you get there, you'll need to bring with you your name and your email address. Nothing else. Don't need to know the name of your favorite pet, street you grew up on, or your mother's maiden name. No credit card required. You'll be able to download the platform, run the data for every futures contract for the next week. This includes Forex and currency pairs, from livestock to lumber, everything in between, E-minis, of course, all the data, all real time, not delayed. You have access to all those markets. If you download the platform and install it today, and let Bert help you get your charts set up and your indicators set up, you'll be able to work with the platform over the weekend, and Sunday night you'll be able to watch the Globex open. You'll even be able to use the simulator to simulate putting on and taking off trades. Now, the simulator is real-time as well. It's just like you were trading with real money, but you're not, okay? It's in demo mode, so you don't have to worry about spending any money because you haven't put any money into an account yet. So just download the platform, get your charts up and going, get your indicators going. Now, Bert will be in the office for a couple more hours today, then he'll be gone for the weekend, but you can reach him toll-free, 866-928-3310. When you go to cfrn.net/apply and fill out the little form, which requires your name and your email address, within 5 minutes, you're going to receive an automated response. Okay? We use a double opt-in method, which means we hate spam as much as you do. So we want to make sure you really want to take the free trial. So you get an automated email that says, somebody using your name and your email address signed up for the free trial. Was that you? And you got to click, yeah, that's me. At which point, I will then manually send you out an email that has all the links you need to get into the live trading room next week, 2 hours a day for the entire week, all 5 days, the link to download the platform, to watch some videos, to get your indicators installed, all of it. And I'll do that this afternoon so that you have the entire weekend to work with the platform, and to be ready to go Monday morning when they ring the bell and the live trading room opens at 9:30 a.m. Eastern. Once again, it is the weekend, so please spend some quality time with your family. Of course, I'll see you in church on Sunday. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this. There is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading E-mini futures or to take a 1 week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.